Welcome back to Building the Bakken Radio, heard on the Crude Life Media Network. My name is Jason Spies, and I'll be your host today. In our next segment, Research and Development, we talk with Charlie Gorecki, Matt Burton-Kelly, and John Harju of the Energy and Environmental Research Center in Grand Forks, North Dakota.
This is about conventional reservoirs with, well, if you think about, we have, you know, in our conventional fields, I'm just going to grab a map.
No problem.
That's going to help illustrate.
But really, we're talking about an industry-wide study here then, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's good. Okay.
So it's outside of Bakken, although Bakken is one of our prime hydrocarbon sources. So a lot of the oil that was generated in the Bakken actually left the Bakken. It actually migrated out of the Bakken and into other formations. Yeah, John.
And that's that Madison and everything.
Yeah,
that's what we're talking about. Right. Okay.
Most of these fields in.
But we're still talking North Dakota.
Yeah, and
Texas.
This is Powder River County of Montana, mm-hmm. but so the what you're not seeing on this is most of the Powder River Basin.
Yeah, it pretty much gets cut off right about here.
This is a big structural feature that we call Cedar Creek Anticline. This is one we call Nesson Anticline. And essentially, most of our fields in North Dakota tend to be associated with these two big structural features.
And this one here, too,
Billings Nose. So mm-hmm. if you think about up in here, what you have actually are some other interesting, very interesting fields that are what we call stratigraphic traps. So the reason the oil is in, you've got a substantial permeability contrast in between more porous rocks and less porous rocks. These things tend to be actually kind of combination traps. But what you have are structural highs in the porous rocks with that cap over them where hydrocarbons have accumulated. And you see these two, these dark green areas, what these are what we call unitized fields, which are places where you've done substantial water flooding. And so what they tend to coincide with is some sort of a little fold in the rocks. An anticline is an area where you have a feature much like that has created a place where those hydrocarbons, when they're migrating across that otherwise fairly flat strata, get trapped.
Because they're buoyant, less dense than the water.
Just like gasoline will float on water, oil will as well. Well, essentially what we looked at historically is water has tended to come from the Black Hills in this direction across the basin. And as it encounters hydrocarbons that have been essentially manufactured in those deep shales, like Bakken, mm-hmm. it gets moved and redistributed into those traps. Well, what happens is places like here, it's probably not accumulated to those same kind of percentages as it has in the traps, but it's probably left a pretty substantial smearing of oil in these residual oil zones.
Now, let's say that the springs out at the Black Hills, they start the water flushing and it comes all the way down to the Missouri, call it, okay, just for argument's sake?
All the way up to here, actually, right underneath us.
All the way to the Red River.
Yeah. Okay, absolutely.
The water that started in Spearfish ends up in Fargo, North Dakota, and Grand Forks, and in Winnipeg.
And actually, the little salt seeps that you see up and down the Red River Valley, that is water that started in the Black Hills, worked its way all the way through this over several million years, and flushed some salts up here. And in the process, it encounters some hydrocarbons and starts sweeping those along, and they get trapped.
So that's
in these
what I'm
little traps.
As that water flushes through, it starts out that pure H2O, and then it goes through and it collects these hydrocarbons and other things,
salts
and everything.
Yep.
Is there something that it picks up along the way that might attach more of those hydrocarbons, like other hydrocarbons or anything like that? Like rock candy, I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
How you make rock candy?
Not particularly. The hydrocarbons don't dissolve very well in the water.
It's those traps that get them.
Yep. So the water is essentially pushing it along mm-hmm. because you've got a big column of water over here in the Black Hills, and it's pushing its way through. There's a head or a potential energy mm-hmm. that water wants to move from here to here, And as it's moving past these hydrocarbons, it tends to sweep them off of those intergranular spaces or pores. And they accumulate in these places, but where they don't accumulate, they've been swept through there, and once the potential energy is gone, you've got this rim of hydrocarbon on those rocks, and that's really the residual oil zone. So it's, these kind of areas like this that we don't see particularly positive oil production may have vast residual oil zones.
So like that beach area, beach North Dakota area, it could very well.
Could be.
The other part of that is that these structures that you see, like the big prominent one right there, the Cedar Creek Anticline and the Nesson Anticline, there might have been structures, or there probably is structures that were occurring in the past that hydrocarbons accumulated into, and the structure got tilted, so it no longer became a structure, and that would have accumulated oil and then got swept out. So that would be another way to get in a residual oil zone.
And any sort of plate shifting could totally change the game.
Yeah, we're in
very
a
easily.
Yeah, I mean, the reason that you have these features is because there's been tectonic stresses that has caused those rocks to fold and buckle a little bit, and these are the ones that we know are supercharged with oil because they still exist as they were. But as Charlie's suggesting, maybe we have other subtle features that were trapped, but now they've reoriented themselves in some way, shape, or form, and essentially spilled that hydrocarbon out of them. Yeah, and actually, those are probably better ones than just the raw transition zones.
And some of these, there's some interesting things. This is an old map, which is kind of nice to have around to see where the historic production. There's some Bakken out there too, but
not too much.
But not, yeah, exactly.
It's not.
When you start,
it's not the whole damn state.
Yeah. To listen to the full-length interview with Charlie Gorecki, Matt Burton Kelly, and John Harju, or to listen to other research and development features, visit buildingthebakken.com. That's buildingthebakken.com. My name is Jason Spies, and this is Building the Bakken Radio, heard on the Crude Life Media Network.
My name is Otis, and I am the host of the Kids in Capitalism KidCast. Let me tell you about one of our sponsors. Hatch Realty is in the business of helping people. They just happen to sell real estate. Call Eric Hatch or anyone on the Hatch Realty team with any real estate question. They want to be a resource and connection for you. That's Hatch Realty, 701-212-1572. That's 701-212-1572. Hatch Realty in the business of helping people. They just happen to sell real estate. Hatch Realty, tell them Otis sent you.
Hey folks, I'm multimedia journalist Jason Spies, and the host of Building the Bakken Radio and Coffee and Capitalism. Traveling across the Rocky Mountain region and the upper Midwest has introduced me to many new people, landed me in exciting places, and created lifelong connections. And there's one place I want to tell you about today, and that's the Lodge at Deadwood. It is without a doubt my favorite place to stay in the Black Hills. In fact, not only is it my favorite, it's pretty much everybody else's. They're a three-time recipient of the best hotel, best casino, and best overall restaurant in the Black Hills. So if you're planning a conference, maybe a weekend getaway, a wedding, whatever it might be, I truly invite you to check out the Lodge at Deadwood and find out why they're consistently voted the best hotel, the best casino, and the best restaurant. Now listen, if I didn't believe that the Lodge at Deadwood was the best place to stay in the Black Hills, I wouldn't be doing this testimonial across our media network, which spans 5 states and 30 plus radio stations. And I feel very confident when I say the Lodge at Deadwood will exceed all your expectations. Check them out online today at deadwoodlodge.com. That's deadwoodlodge.com.
Since 1979, MBI Energy Services has committed to responsibly growing with today's oil and gas industry by providing proven experience, strategic locations, and integrated services. MBI Energy Services is well established, and its innovation in safety and excellent customer service is what truly makes MBI Energy Services the oil field service professionals. MBI Energy Services, the cutting edge in oil field safety solutions. Learn more at MBIEnergyServices.com.
My name is Chris Somerville, and I'm co-owner of the small wind company Dakota Turbines from North Dakota. I'm also a member of DWEA, the Distributed Wind Energy Association, which is our national trade group with over 100 members dedicated to promoting the distributed wind industry in America. Today I'd like to share with you my perspective of the U.S. distributed wind energy industry and how it relies on our government's continued support through effective incentive programs like the USDA REAP program and the Small Wind ITC. First, I'd like to explain what distributed wind is. It's sometimes referred to as small wind because it's usually a single turbine under 100 kilowatts that serves an individual local site. However, distributed wind can also include larger turbines and community wind projects that are deployed behind the meter. But large wind farms are not included. Electricity produced by distributed systems is consumed locally, offsetting power purchased from the utility, which results in reduced electric bills. The typical customer is rural because a proper wind turbine installation requires adequate land space and tall towers for unobstructed access to the wind. Distributed wind has all of the typical renewable energy benefits, including environmental, electric price stability, energy independence, and national security. But what I really want to focus here today is one very special benefit, which is made in the USA. The U.S. small wind industry is comprised of 90% American-made machinery. American small businesses like Dakota Turbines are employing thousands of skilled workers, and we have a network of over 3,000 suppliers nationwide. Our projects require local construction labor and O&M support, concrete, wiring, trucking, trenching, backhoes, and cranes. All combined typically represent 50% of the cost of the system. So our industry truly is American small businesses, which are often rurally located, doing work with other American small businesses.